We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
What's up, listeners? This is Curtis Patrick. I just wanted to stop by and say thank you for supporting RotoViz Radio. You are the absolute best audience in the business, and I know it. As a special thank you, I'm offering 10% off your next RotoViz subscription. Just use code 2020RVRadio at checkout. That's right. Go to rotoviz.com, click subscribe, and enter code 2020RVRadio at checkout for 10% off. You can even extend your subscription. Oh, and one more thing. If you haven't ever done it, please rate and review the podcast you're listening to right now on Apple Podcasts. It's really easy. It only takes like 10, 15 seconds. Just do it. We'd love to hear your feedback. Now, back to the show.
Mahomes has the time, delivers perfectly downfield. Touchdown, Patrick Mahomes with a rope.
This one, Adams, touchdown.
This time going deep for Beckham Jr.
Hello, everyone. You're listening to RotoViz Overtime on RotoViz Radio. My name is Colm Kelly. You can follow me on Twitter at Overtime Ireland. As always, I am joined by my co-host. It is Sean Siegel. Some people know him as the creator of the running back or the zero RB philosophy that is so widely talked about in terms of the fantasy football circles and draft debates, I guess we'll call it. And Sean, today's show is going to continue with kind of a theme that we've had over the last couple of early week shows. We're going to look a little bit at the fallout of free agency. And I mentioned it to you before we started recording. The free agents and their landing spots, they don't always fit with maybe where our dream scenarios would be. And we'll be talking today if any of these players land at where we would like to see them land, or if they've landed maybe in somewhere where we would have preferred to see them not land. So a couple of interesting candidates. We did talk last week about the possibility of Will Fuller with the Green Bay Packers. You brought it up. I said that I wasn't going to get my hopes up until something actually happened, but that obviously didn't come to fruition over the past week. So Packers search for those wide receiver options will continue over the rest of the offseason, the draft season, and so forth. But some interesting landing spots over the last couple of days.
Yeah, it's been interesting to track where these different guys are going. And like you said, it doesn't always work out. I did a full Dynasty Superflex update of the rankings yesterday. And so we're going to talk about where some of these guys are going now, the risers, the fallers, you know, what you should be thinking about when you're drafting these guys in startups, if you're sending out trades to try and acquire them now. And we'll start out, Colm, with Kenny Golladay, our Detroit Lions star here. The Lions embarking on what looks like it could be a 5, 6, 7, maybe a 35-year rebuild, and have decided to get rid of all of their good players. DeAndre Swift is going to be there by himself next season. the complete collapse of anything positive in Detroit does appear to be hurting his value a little bit, not surprisingly. But Golladay, we see move from the Lions to the New York Giants. Colin, this is kind of an interesting one because the Giants, what they really probably need is a better quarterback. And yet when you've drafted a young QB in the top five, he's demonstrated a little bit of upside. And, you know, we look at where the teams are now as they scramble for these quarterbacks, the prices that they're willing to pay. And before you give up on someone, you want to make sure that he can't be the guy. So they've gone with Golladay here to try and add to an offense that in some way was already a little bit more full than some of the other potential offenses that he could have gone into. Now, you have Golden Tate leaving. Golden Tate's still a little bit of a name in the NFL community, but not someone who really is doing anything in reality, certainly not in fantasy. And when you look at the targets and the air yards vacated here, it really doesn't amount to much, right? You have 52 targets for Tate, a measly 457 air yards. That's not going to be enough for Golladay, so he's going to have to take a chunk out of some of the other players here. The obvious candidate, and I think sort of the sad news for those of us who believe that it's actually not Darius Slayton who's the problem, it's the quarterback play. But Slayton, someone who had 97 targets, but was being targeted way down the field, 13.7 depth, a 33% share of the air yards there for New York. He only caught 50 of his 97 targets, in part because, again, Daniel Jones struggling. Jones minus 34 passing fantasy points over expectation. Only Sam Darnold was worse last season. Now, Colin, when we look at this and we try and figure out what the offense is going to look like next year, one of the things that we have to keep in consideration, too, is that Saquon Barkley missed most of the season, only had 9 targets. Now, they did have some targets split out to some of those guys who filled in for him, but we would expect any kind of dynamic Giants offense to feature Barkley pretty heavily in the passing game. So my question for you, and we'll give where I now have him ranked at the end, but Colin, how do you expect this offense to look in 2021? You have Slayton, you have Sterling Shepard, you've got Evan Ingram, you've got Saquon Barkley. Is Daniel Jones going to take the next step forward? Is Kenny Golladay the guy that we want here? I would think that, you know, potentially this isn't great for Golladay, but it's also bad for the rest of the pass catchers.
It's one of those situations that I kind of hinted at when we were starting off, where, you know, there's a lot of places that we could have seen him land where it would have added value to him and that team, and also not really add into the opportunities of the players that are on that offense. So you mentioned there, you know, Golden Tate's out, but not like 52 targets. It's not going to really be enough to keep the rest of the guys going in this offense. And the other thing you mentioned is Barkley only having 9 targets on the season. So we're going to see a situation where I would expect Barkley's numbers, hopefully injury-free this season, to go up dramatically. And I would also expect Kenny Golladay to get a good chunk of the work here. So we're looking at the other guys in the offense, and Slayton, somebody who we've seen develop quite nicely. Unfortunately, I think it could be a case that there isn't enough really to go around for these guys to be, you know, those top tier talents that we were probably hoping. I think Golladay is going to be the clear number one. I really like Kenny Golladay as a player, one of the best contested catchers in the NFL. We see him make those difficult catches time after time, and I think that was part of the reason that you know, him and Matthew Stafford had such a good kind of rapport. Stafford's not afraid to throw it into those kind of difficult windows, and Golladay was always willing to make the attempt to get it. So I think if you're looking at it from an NFL team building perspective, it's probably a really good move. From us, for a fantasy football perspective, it's a little bit of a disappointing landing spot overall. I think it also means that Daniel Jones is in a spot now where we basically are saying, this is it. You have to make that jump here moving forward, or time's going to run out pretty quick for him. Like, he is only 23. He's going to turn 24 this offseason. You know, 2019 draft pick. But we've seen some flashes, but like, they have been flashes where there's gaps in between then, if not a huge amount happening. So I think the Giants are putting a lot of faith in Daniel Jones here, but I think that, you know, it could turn sour very, very quick if we don't see a leap forward from him. We've seen them be one of the more disappointing offenses in recent years. And, you know, without Barkley last year, they can have an excuse for it. But when you get Barkley back this year, there's no real excuses. They've added some big free agency pieces and none really bigger than Kenny Golladay, who for me was, even though he's older in years, and we're going to look at it from a dynasty perspective and how much his value is affected from that perspective, and will he have value moving forward, and can he maintain that value for resale and so on. But in terms of an NFL move, I think it's a pretty strong move from the Giants, but I think it's kind of one of those that might be papering over the cracks, like you mentioned, that the quarterback might be the issue. It mightn't be the wide receivers that you just mentioned there as well.
So, Colin, where would you have these guys now? I have Kenny Golladay. He falls from number 79 to number 90 for me. And for the reasons that we talk about on the show all the time, it's a fairly wide receiver heavy, you know, top 10 rounds. So for him, he falls to wide receiver 40. That puts him just after Allen Robinson, Terrace Marshall, and Denzel Mims. Mims, another sort of interesting guy with the changes that they've made in New York. We touched on those changes in New York last week, but I didn't really mention that I think that Mims is the big beneficiary there. I thought that the Jets might add some major pieces, someone like a Kenny Golladay. Instead, Corey Davis and Keelan Cole. I think that works really well to Mims' favor. So Kenny Golladay now sits in the middle of the eighth round in Superflex. We look at his quarterback being in that same range with him there, going in round nine. Is this a range where you would like them? Do you think I've penalized Golladay a little bit too much? The other element that we have to look at with Golladay is that he, despite having not been in the NFL for that long, he's no longer one of your young wide receivers here. Right. So that also comes into play with him. When he gets the second contract, we really needed someone who was going to turn 28 during this season to be in the perfect landing spot for fantasy points in order to want him on our dynasty teams. Is he now just a clear sell for you? Or do you think that in this range, he still has the opportunity to be someone you could buy? Or are some other people going to be even heavier selling on Golladay?
I think he falls into a situation where he's going to be a sell unless you're on a, like if you're on a team that's rebuilding, for example. I don't think there's any use in having him there. I think it's going to be a case there of moving him on. I think that this move in general, like I mentioned, you know, with Stafford, like I think there's a downgrade here in quarterback. I think there's a downgrade in overall, you know, situation in terms of playing in New York. There was a lot of difficult wind conditions, difficult weather conditions playing in Detroit. It's indoors all the time. So there's obviously not that to deal with. We've talked a lot about how disappointed at times we've been in the offensive scheme in Detroit, but more so with the running backs rather than the offensive, the wide receiver or pass catching pieces, which have always been kind of buoyed a bit by Matthew Stafford. So there's a couple of downgrades happening here. And I don't think you're wrong to drop him down those spots. The other thing you mentioned there is his age. He did come into the league a little bit older, and I know when he came into the league, we were both big fans, and like I mentioned, as an actual player, still a big fan. But the problem with that now is that as his seasons have rolled up here and now he's entered free agency and moved on, he is much older than a lot of players making that first move in free agency. So the landing spot just wasn't the perfect landing spot, and I think with everything that's happened and the landing spot, I think it's right to that value to take a little bit of a knock. So I think he's in that range where some people will think it is a nice value, but with his age especially, I think it's one that's going to, you just have to proceed with that bit of caution because lots of question marks. You mentioned the likes of Denzel Mims in a kind of similar area. You know, we're looking at the targets to go around, the opportunities to go around, and the target share might just not be there this year for Kenny Golladay to keep his production going at kind of a way it had been in Detroit. And somebody like Mims, where the offense mightn't be as exciting at the moment, he has an opportunity to step up and get those targets as a wide receiver one. And you know, he's a player who, although last year didn't go according to plan, you know, the upside is there as a second year player going into the league. The value rise can happen with him. Whereas we're looking with Kenny Golladay, you know, I would expect that each year we move forward, his draft ADP is going to continue and these startups to get a little bit lower and a little bit lower. So If it was me in the draft, I'd be going for that upside play of somebody like a Mims in that spot.
I think that you're right there. Daniel Jones may be more interesting in redraft, and specifically if you're looking at best ball superflex leagues. He's currently going at QB 23 in the FFPC superflex format. That's toward the end of round five, where we know from the Roster Construction Explorer that you really want to have those three QBs locked down. So with Big Ben, Tua, Kirk Cousins, Derek Carr right ahead of him here, is he someone you'd be excited to kind of use as that last piece in round five? There's sort of a safe piece with a little bit of scrambling ability, and now the passing volume almost certainly being locked in with Galladay. Do you move him ahead of Roethlisberger or Tua, or with those guys getting Fuller and Juju back, you just as soon have them instead?
I think with I would move him ahead of Roethlisberger. I think I would still take Tua ahead of him, especially with the signing of Fuller. So again, talking back to somebody like Mims, the upside of the growth that we may see from Tua this year, even though there was a lot of points last year where I didn't enjoy watching what he was doing on a weekly basis when he was in there, but I think I would still take that shot with him, and I would have him above Roethlisberger based again on the upside. Like, we're looking at a situation here where we know what Ben Roethlisberger is. We're going to get what Ben Roethlisberger does. There's going to be some big plays. There's going to be some very poor turnovers. And with Daniel Jones, we're probably going to have something similar. But like you mentioned, the scrambling ability, and we've talked about the running quarterbacks over the last number of months on the show and how much that can add the value. Daniel Jones has shown to be quite proficient in that way in terms of rushing. So we can't pin all our hopes on that, but when we have Saquon Barkley back in, when we have Kenny Golladay there, you mentioned Darius Slayton, who I certainly like as a player. So there is a lot of positives, and it's just about, like, they're putting everything in place for them.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Daniel Jones to succeed. Will he succeed? I'm not 100% sure, but at his current ADP, I think he is probably the player on this offense that I think could be the value, because he has to spread around that target share, whether it's going to be all to Golladay or all to Slayton. That's going to be decided in the long run, but he's going to be the one making those passes, and I think that'll help him sustain value. So I'm interested to see where his season goes, but I mentioned it a minute ago. I think this is do or move on, I think, this season for Daniel Jones. I think the Giants are really giving him all the pieces, and if he doesn't deliver, I think we could see things hot up for him very quickly.
Look, no one's perfect. Even the best baseball players strike out with the bases loaded. The best golfers sometimes three-putt with the tournament on the line. So if you feel like you come up short in the bedroom sometimes, it's perfectly okay. But if it's bothering you, there are options. Go to GetRoman.com/RotoViz now. With Roman, you get a free online evaluation and ongoing care for ED, all from the comfort and privacy of your home. A U.S.-licensed healthcare professional will work with you to find the best treatment plan. If medication's appropriate, it ships to you free with two-day shipping. The whole process is straightforward and discreet. Getting started is simple. Just go to GetRoman.com/RotoViz and complete an online visit. Take care of your ED without leaving home. Complete an online visit today to connect with a doctor and take care of it. Go to GetRoman.com/RotoViz now to get $15 off your first month. Look, there's a straightforward way to take care of your ED. GetRoman.com/RotoViz. Get started now to save $15 on your first month of treatment.
So, Sean, moving on to somebody else who's always been a pretty interesting candidate, to have on teams. He's actually somebody who I thought would have been interesting landing with the Packers as well. I thought they might have had a chance here of landing him based on thought the contract might fit a little better than the one that we talked about with Will Fuller. I thought Kenny Galladay's was always going to be a little bit high. So Curtis Samuel lands with the Washington football team. Always kind of that kind of player who can, you know, get those yards after the catch, but can do a lot of different things in the offense. And we've talked on the show many times about Terry McLaurin, how things work out for him. Him being really, I'd say, Logan Thomas last year being kind of the only piece. I know we had J.D. McKissic there as well, and we're trying to fit all those players in to see what we can get out of it. But I think Curtis Samuel is a really good fit here in this offense. And we talked a couple of weeks ago as well about Fitzpatrick falling into this spot. So I think there's going to be a very, very interesting signing. And he's somebody who, when this deal came in, kind of perked my interest quite a bit. I don't know if you feel the same way, Sean, but I just thought that based on everything he's shown over the last year, it hasn't really been consistent, but they've used him in the running game. They've used him in the passing game. Lots of different elements you can add him in. And I think in this offense, a bit like I mentioned earlier with Mims, he could be a major piece. Whereas if he was in another offense, he might be the fourth or fifth option. I think in this offense, he could end up being the second or third option in terms of the pass game.
It's interesting when you go and look at how these two wide receiver depth charts broke down last season, and the NFL Weekly Explorer on the site does a fantastic job of letting you look and compare these players. Curtis Samuel last year did have a good season, like you said, 97 targets, 844 yards, 3 touchdowns, had some additional rushing contributions, and that was on a team where you had 2 100-plus target guys, and Robbie Anderson being the surprise leader of that team in terms of targets with 138. That's actually more than Terry McLaurin had in Washington with 134. DJ Moore, 118. Both of those guys put up over 1,000 yards, and both of them generated a lot of air yards as well, 1,300-plus for Anderson, 1,500-plus for Moore. This offense transformed last year to where Moore goes from being a little bit the underneath guy to the deep threat. Robbie Anderson, the speed demon on the team, becomes sort of an underneath and intermediate threat. And Curtis Samuel really becomes the possession, get the ball in his hands, try and get some yards after the catch kind of player. And one of the things that I think will determine whether or not he's successful in Washington is what they decide to do with him there. Right, because how he was used in 2020 was completely different than how he was used in 2019. So he's going back to a head coach who used him in a fashion in 2019 that was actually extremely unsuccessful. Right, they used him as the deep threat, and every week people are saying, okay, well, he's getting these deep targets. All he has to do is catch a couple, and suddenly he'll be this fantasy dominator, because when you have that much deep volume, you only have to hit on a couple of them, you know, get that touchdown, get the 50, 60 yards all in one fell swoop, and you have those fantasy points, but it just never really materialized. Curtis Samuel, for all the speed that he has, is probably not that type of player. Now, it doesn't mean that 100% for sure he will never be able to catch a deep pass, or that it never makes any sense to run him deep. I think that you want to use his speed in a variety of ways. But in 2019, he was targeted 14.2 yards down the field, and his air conversion rate was only 0.4, right? So when you talk about empty targets, I mean, that's the very definition. It was to the point where at the end of the season, he had to be phased out of the offense because it was just so empty, so useless, right? 2020, that completely changes. It gets cut in half. He's targeted just over 7 yards down the field, but his conversion rate goes up above 1. And so I think that as we see what he does in Washington, and as he's this complement to McLaurin, who's a more of an all-around player, the better overall talent, the more skilled wide receiver, if they use him effectively as a complement, then I think that will be good for both guys, great for the Washington offense. If they try to shoehorn him into these roles that he's not really cut out for, then I think you could continue to have a little bit of that disappointment where every week you're sort of on the verge, and then it's frustrating, and then you can't play him in start sit kinds of leagues. But the other thing that I think is very promising, and this ties into a little bit we talked about last week and a really good article that Zach has up on the site about some of the quarterback changes in free agency. We have Ryan Fitzpatrick here as the likely starter in Washington. And I think that's a big upgrade over what Samuel had with Teddy Bridgewater in Carolina last year. And we know that Fitzpatrick was successful last year, one of the reasons why he was in a little bit of demand again this season. But he averaged 1.4 touchdowns per game, 7.7 air yards per attempt, and 59% conversion. I mentioned those specific numbers because they stand in fairly sharp contrast with Bridgewater, who averaged only a touchdown per game, was at 7.1 in terms of depth. And even though he was throwing shorter passes, he still converted them only at 53% in terms of air yards to receiving yards. So Fitzpatrick, a pretty big quarterback upgrade. If Washington uses Samuel correctly, if Fitzpatrick has another one of these magical seasons, I think that you could finally see Samuel jumping up into the ranks of the very playable wide receivers in this offense with Fitzpatrick, McLaurin, Samuel, Antonio Gibson could be a must watch, which would be a big change from what we've had in Washington the last several years.
Yeah, and I think, Bridgewater for me has always been somebody who's been a more cautious quarterback, and Fitzpatrick has always been the ultimate uncautious quarterback, I guess we'll call it. So I think we're definitely going to see more options there. And we kind of, you touched on it with the players in front of him, Anderson and Moore in Carolina. You know, you look at some of the players that could be in the mix, in Washington, and doesn't hold the same stature in terms of the players that are there. Is just 24 years old as well, so you know, plenty of time still to have that big breakout moving forward. Will be turning 25 just before the start of the season. Juju Smith-Schuster is up next in terms of landing spots. Sean, we did talk about the Steelers probably a month ago maybe on the show, and we kind of didn't expect him to end back with the Steelers. We were kind of talking about them moving on, and Claypool and Deontay Johnson and how things would work out there. Does land back with the Steelers at 1 year contract, $8 million. I was fully expecting to land somewhere else, so it's going to be interesting to see how it shakes out. We did think last year kind of those three mouths to feed and Smith-Schuster, Johnson and Claypool was a difficult kind of situation to spread the wealth around, and I think we could be falling back into a very similar situation this year. How does it affect your thoughts on those Steelers wide receivers in particular? And we already, I guess, talked about Big Ben versus Daniel Jones. We've seen Big Ben, you know, he came back from the injury last year, but there's still huge question marks around him. This team was on a roll at one point, but it always felt a little bit like a paper tiger, or it was a little bit false in terms of their win-loss record, and the end of the season ended pretty poorly for them. So how do you see this offense now as we move forward, and how does the landing spot affect Juju in your ranks?
I think this is pretty devastating for Smith-Schuster in terms of the long-term trajectory of his career. He signs the one-year contract. He has a chance when he's still very young to sign a bigger contract next season if he has a good year. Some of the other teams bandied about in relationship to him, and you never know how accurate this really is, but if he had a similar opportunity to go to the Kansas City Chiefs, I think that would have been potentially the move that would have launched him. It's hard to see how returning to Pittsburgh is going to get him a much better contract next year, and from a fantasy perspective, how it's going to really fuel his rise back up the board. So I have him falling from 80 to 94. That's not necessarily a huge fall, but when you're talking about a player who's coming off of a down season, still very young, and had an opportunity to pick his spot, at least to an extent, then this isn't what you want to see, right? Because Juju, those first three seasons, looked like a star. This last season, he looked like a possession receiver, and not even necessarily a good possession receiver. You pull up the AYA app on the site, you can see Ben Roethlisberger there. You look at his adjusted yards per attempt targeting different receivers from 2017 to 2019, and Smith-Schuster leads the way at 9.5 adjusted yards per attempt. you know, that's even well above Antonio Brown in that range, who is at 7.9. I mean, Smith-Schuster was really the guy, appeared to be an ascending star. You pull up 2020 and it's a completely different story here. And it's not just kind of bad news for Smith-Schuster. I think this is pretty bad news for Deontay Johnson as well. You have Chase Claypool at 9.5. You have James Washington at 7.4. But Johnson and Smith-Schuster are down there at 6.3 and 6.2 respectively. And you can see that not only is Pittsburgh's passing game pretty inefficient in this area, but there's also a lot of overlap in what they're doing. I mean, Johnson, a very shallow receiver at a target depth of 7.9, but Smith-Schuster, I mean, he's almost running back types of plays here, down at 5.6. And with them cannibalizing each other, but also being inefficient on these short targets where, you know, they're not getting the field stretching element. With Johnson, obviously, you had all of these drops. So now we have these two guys, both of whom are exciting players, both of whom you have this enthusiasm for what they could be, and to know that they're going to be back in the same offense with a quarterback whose arm appears to be shot. I mean, I think that we may get one more solid season from Roethlisberger, but you know, he's no longer the playmaker that he once was. We discussed the quarterbacks in relation to Kenny Golladay. Roethlisberger, and I mean, this comes as no surprise when you hear Johnson and Smith-Schuster's depth, but I mean, he's down at 6.4 in terms of the target depth on average last season. And even then, he's only converting at a 44% rate, which, you know, a lot of that goes back to the drops. All of his receivers had trouble holding the ball last year, but I don't think that people wanted to see them come back and run this offense back the same way. You have Chase Claypool, who was looking at a breakout, now is a little bit more disappointing, not because he's not going to be the guy, because he still could be. I mean, you want the ascending player there. You want the guy who can beat you all over the field. We talked about Matt Spencer's freak score article last week and how Claypool was the real standout there. He could be the big time touchdown guy in this offense. But to have these guys competing in an offense that may again be inefficient, I think that's frustrating to everybody.
Yeah, it really is. And I was hoping for a different landing spot and to, you know, have an opportunity for him to bounce back. We obviously were concerned about last year, but I think this year going into it, we're going to be concerned heading into it. I think, you know, still so young, showed so much promise in those early two seasons, basically. And it's fallen off in a major, major way. So we may see that bounce back, but I think we're going to have to temper expectations. There is always that question is, you know, he's going to hit free agency next year. You know, hopefully he has a good season and gets to move to a better situation. But so many question marks around. And, you know, I'm rooting for Juju for everything to work out right for him. I always liked him as a player, but it's very difficult for that to happen. Somebody who we've always rooted for as well, and last year was having his big breakout, but then unfortunately finished the season suspended, that was Will Fuller. We talked about the possibility of him ending up in Green Bay. Obviously that didn't happen. Ends up in a situation with Miami. I think it really boosters that offense. I like Will Fuller a huge amount as a player, but he is starting to get a little bit older now, you know, as we move forward here. Sean, I think it's a good landing spot. Could have been better, but I think he has a chance here to be, you know, if not a number one receiver, as close to it in this offense as you can be. And I think it's going to be interesting to see how Tua can use that. I think if we, you know, if we didn't have Ryan Fitzpatrick in Washington, I think if we still had him on the Dolphins, I think that would have been a lot of fun to see him throwing it deep to Will Fuller. But it's going to be interesting to see if Tua can step up to the plate. It is interesting to see these teams giving those young quarterbacks the pieces to try and see if they can actually make it at this level.
Yeah, and Fuller here, I think, becomes the guy. You have Devontae Parker, who is always a little bit more hype than he is actual production, but two different players, right? You have Fuller as the vertical guy. You have Parker as the contested catch guy. You know, when he's on, when he gets open enough that you can even throw the ball up to him and have those contested catches, Tua will be interesting to follow. I think this signing makes him someone who is now very rosterable in best ball leagues where you have to get those two, three guys in super flex. It'll be interesting to follow this offense. In a lot of ways, the contrast between a rookie who is going to naturally be a little bit more conservative, is trying to protect the ball, is trying to make the right decisions with a veteran like Ryan Fitzpatrick, who's going to be on the very, very far opposite end of the spectrum where he throws caution to the wind, attacks downfields, reads the defense so quickly, and, you know, has that Jameis Winston-esque ability to make the big plays, not concerned about throwing the ball into traffic, you know, giving up some of those interceptions. That kind of contrast is going to make the rookie look worse than he is. Now, we also have the contrast with Joe Burrow and Justin Herbert, who had much, much better seasons. And I think the expectations going in for Tua versus Herbert create this environment in which there's now a lot of skepticism about Tua. I think that some of that skepticism is justified. We have this situation now where we can see just how talented the wide receiving core was that he had at Alabama. And so suddenly all the different positives more or less boil down to accuracy. And accuracy is important, but accuracy at the NFL level in most cases needs to be paired with this veteran experience that you get with guys like a Kurt Warner or a Phillip Rivers. You know, that type of player who can use the accuracy and the anticipation to make plays. For a rookie, if that's your main strength, it's a little bit more difficult because you're not processing things quickly enough to really use the accuracy. So the questions that you get with Tua that really are mitigated at the collegiate level because your team is so much better than everyone else's. You know, now we have the concerns about athleticism, we have the concerns about size, we have the concerns about arm strength. And, you know, does he have enough other talent to go with his accuracy to be a big time NFL quarterback? That's a little bit still out there in terms of, you know, what the jury decides, but getting Fuller into the equation is going to help him. Getting a little bit more experience is going to help him there. You know, his rookie season wasn't a disaster. It just wasn't at the level that allowed the Dolphins to really take the next step to being a clear cut playoff team. We know that early drafted quarterbacks tend to make this big jump in year two. Fuller definitely gives him that opportunity. But at the same time, I still have Fuller dropping from 70 to 81 as a result of the insertion into this offense that probably isn't as well constructed to take advantage of his vertical ability. So we have him falling. We have three of the four guys falling here. Column the riser, and the number we didn't actually give was Curtis Samuel. He rises from 132 to 115. So he's still below the other three guys, but we can see the impact of free agency when we look at how much closer he is now when we contrast Samuel, who really hasn't done much at the NFL level and a year ago looked like he was on the verge of maybe not washing out of the league, but becoming, you know, more of your Tavon Austin, Cordarrelle Patterson type of player, to now someone who justifiably, you know, is just a round or two behind these three established stars.
Yeah, and I know as well, with the piece, Sean, you have a couple of other updates in there as well that the listeners can check out. Emmanuel Sanders, John Brown, Nelson Aguilar all in there. And I know that Zach has some updates on AJ Green as well, Marlon Mack, Andy Dalton, and Ryan Fitzpatrick. So there's lots of good information up on the website. Neil Dutton as well, diving in with Gerald Everett and Marvin Jones. So you can check out all the different information up on the website and you know, see how the guys are feeling about how those guys are faring out in those landing spots, if you should be moving them on from your rosters or if you should be keeping them on those rosters or targeting them in 2021. As always, as a loyal podcast listener, you can get yourself 10% off a 1-year RotoViz subscription to get access to all that content. And you can do that by adding the code RVRadio2021 at checkout. We're going to rotoviz.com/podcast for further information. As always, give us a written review on your favorite podcast app. We do appreciate that greatly. We're coming up pretty close here over the next couple of weeks to episode 200. It's hard to believe episode 200 of RotoViz Overtime. We might run some contests as we get close to that, but that'll be coming up in the very near future around the time of the draft. So dropping us those written reviews can be a nice thank you for those 200 episodes as we get closer. But that's going to do it for today's edition of the show. We will be back on Thursday with another one. My name is Colin Kelly. You can follow me on Twitter at Overtime Ireland, and as always, joined by Sean Siegel. Make sure you're checking out all of his great work up on rotoviz.com. And until we're back with that next show on Thursday, as always, have a good one. Thank you for listening to Overtime on RotoViz Radio. Please rate and review the RotoViz Radio podcast on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. You can contact us via email at rotovizradio@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at RotoViz Radio. And remember, you can always support the pod by subscribing to RotoViz with a discount through the RotoViz Radio homepage, rotoviz.com/podcast.